Welcome to Module 4 in the Evidence-Based Leadership Program, The Habit of Evidence. Dean Spitzer is the author of a book called Transforming Performance Measurement, and in that book he says this: effective management is based on a foundation of effective measurement, and almost everything else is based on that. Organizations are conglomerations of many systems. Measurement is actually the most fundamental system of all. When the measurement system works well, management tends to manage and reward the right things, and the desired results will occur. The measurement system, for good or ill, triggers virtually everything that happens in an organization, both strategic and tactical. This is because all the other organizational systems are ultimately based on what the measurement system is telling the other systems to do. That's pretty powerful, actually, that last phrase in particular. All other organizational systems are ultimately based on what the measurement system is telling the other systems to do. But measurement can be trivial and facile, and is exactly that in many organizations. But measurement done well and done deliberately is the most powerful evidence that a high-performance organization uses to make decisions. This is the habit of grounding decisions in evidence. Due to the use of mortality rates of stroke victims to compare hospitals in the US, some hospitals were discharging patients early. So if they died at home, they would not be counted in the hospital's mortality rates. How are measures or KPIs used in your sector? Are they used to judge performance, or are they used solely to improve performance? In my experience, measures are used too often to judge, and it's one of the reasons why so many people hate it and why so few people see any relevance in learning to do measurement better. In a culture of using measures or KPIs to judge, evidence isn't taken seriously. W. Edwards Deming was an American engineer, a statistician, professor, author, lecturer, and management consultant, and he's now known as the father of quality. He's famous for such wisdom as this: judging people does not help them. In God we trust, all others must bring data. You don't know what you don't know. And my personal favorite is, without data, you're just another person with an opinion. Anyone's personal point of view on a situation is just that. It's a point of view. Measurement sees more completely than a point of view. Firstly, measurement sees through time, which humans are not particularly good at. We're good at snapshots, but not time series. And measurement sees through space, where humans are limited by line of sight and personal bias and what's directly in front of them. The measurement we're talking about is the meaningful measurement of strategy, but meaningful measurement of strategy is not exactly common practice. Let's look at some examples of how strategic goals are typically measured. For the goal of enhanced supply reliability and quality, we have one measure: average outage time per customer. But this is average outage time per all customers, and it doesn't measure the outage duration by customers who experience an outage. It just is an overall system average. This goal is also measured by voltage fluctuations. But how's that quantified? Is it the duration of fluctuations? Is it the frequency of them? Is it the number of customers affected by a fluctuation? It's a vague measure. It's not clear what it actually is about. For the goal to create a zero harm culture, to ensure a safe workplace for people, one measure was the safety culture assessment tool. That's not a measure. It's just a method of gathering data. What is actually being quantified, we have no clue. That goal's also measured by Win the Safe Work Award. That's subjective. Who's judging the award? What are they being judged against? It's indirect in the sense that it's an external party judging safety, and it's not a direct look at exactly how safe the organization is or people working in it. And usually awards are fairly infrequent too. They might only be every year or two. Now for a goal of foster a resilient and adaptable workforce, we have the first measure, employee absenteeism. That's used a lot to measure aspects of culture, but all it measures is whether people are at work or not and not why they're at work or not. Employee absenteeism may have some correlation to a resilient and adaptable workforce, but it's indirect evidence. And the second measure for this goal is resilience program implemented for all staff. It's not a measure, that's just a milestone. It's just saying some action is going to get done that might improve the goal, but it is not evidence of the goal being improved. So I wonder, do you have measures like these or other bad measures in your organization? You know you don't need to. There are a few specific features that make these bad measures. A, they're not quantifiable. B, they're not evidence of the results. And C, they're not tracked through time, or they can't show change over time. So now notice how the next set of measures we'll look at are different to these. What we're going to do is return to the new measurable versions of those goals we just looked at, which we saw back in the video about the first EBL habit of direction. The newly worded goal of customers' experience uninterrupted supply is easier to find a direct measure for, and that measure is average outage time per affected customer. The newly worded goal of customers' equipment is not damaged by voltage fluctuations is also easier to measure, the number of damages due to voltage fluctuations. The newly worded goal of safety is the first topic in every team meeting. That's measured by average staff agreement that safety was discussed before the activity was carried out. The newly worded goal of people don't suffer chronic work stress. That's measured by the percentage of staff experiencing a downward HRV trend. In case you're not aware, HRV stands for heart rate variability, and it's become a very popular measure of stress. Finally, the newly worded goal of people participate willingly in change projects, that's measured by the average hours per week that staff spend on change programs they volunteered for. Now, it's fair enough that you might not fully agree that these are the measures that you'd choose as the best ones, but they are the measures that the owners of these goals chose. There is not ever going to be one universally correct measure for any specific goal. The measure you choose for a goal, even a goal similar to another organization, will be specific to your unique context. More importantly, though, do you notice how these measures are different to the previous ones? And I wonder, what do you notice? So hit pause if you want a little time to ponder. Now, a few things make them more meaningful as measures. One is they're just so easy to understand, and generally a really easy to understand measure has a clear name, but also a detailed description. What that description does is make a few things really clear. The first thing it makes clear is what is being measured, or the performance data item. Measures are evidence of the results that matter. They're not the how, they're not what's available, or easy, or obvious, or traditionally measured. They're direct evidence of the results that matter. The next thing a description should have is a quantification method. Or the statistic, if you like, average, number of, percentage of. And that's what turns the raw evidence in data form into the values of the measure. And the third thing that a measure's description needs to be clear about is how it's going to change over time. So we need a temporal data item, like monthly or weekly or quarterly. Measures are for learning about what works and what doesn't, And that happens over time. So really, that gives us a simple recipe for writing excellent measures. It has a name, but also a description. And the description is made up of a performance data item, a quantification method or statistic, and a temporal data item, or the frequency that the measure is calculated over. What this means is that completing projects or hitting milestones, they're not evidence that our strategy is becoming reality. Meaningful evidence is evidence of results, not activity. It's evidence of the ends, not the means. In PUMP, we have a five-step measure design technique. Now, the first step is to begin with the result in mind. Measures are evidence of results, not convenient or traditional things to count. Next, be sensory specific. List the sensory specific evidence that would convince you the goal was happening. Evidence comes before measures because measures are a gauge of how much a result is occurring, and therefore we need to know how to recognize how that result manifests into observable reality. So evidence before measures. The next step is to list potential measures based on that evidence. Measures are a way to quantify evidence. So good measures start with a statistic like number of, average of, percentage of, total or sum of, or ratio of. And they tell us how much the result is happening. The next step in designing a measure is to check the bigger picture. Measures can trigger dysfunctional behavior, or they can sabotage other areas of performance. And it's important to think that through before we go ahead and choose a final measure. And when we do choose a final measure, maybe we'll end up with two final measures if you need to. We name them. We give each measure a unique name and a meaningful description that captures that quantification method, the performance data item, and the temporal data item. Now, your facilitator will guide you to use the measure design technique during your EBL immersion workshop to develop your strategic measures. But here's how you can play with it in the meantime. So go back to the last activity that you did when we talked about the habit of direction, and use the newly worded goal that you produced from those measurability tests. If you ended up with more than one goal, just pick one of them. So write it down. Then go through the first three steps of the PUMP measure design technique. The three steps you'll practice are these. Firstly, what's the evidence, the sensory evidence, the observable evidence that your reworded strategic goal is happening, that would convince you it was happening? Next, how could that evidence be quantified or turned into potential measures? So list the different ways that you might be able to quantify that evidence. And then, which of those potential measures do you think has the best strength or relevance or convincing power, if you like, and is feasible enough to measure? In other words, you should be able to get the data for it if you don't already have it. So how about we summarize our discussion about the evidence habit with three important things to remember when we choose measures as evidence of our strategy. These are three important mindset shifts and they help us practice that habit of evidence. Learning, not judging. That's why we measure results, not people. Evidence comes before measures. So we've really got to describe evidence of results first, evidence of our goals first, and then quantify that evidence to produce meaningful measures. And thirdly, measure what matters. Measure as few things as necessary, but no fewer. Well, now we can move on to the next habit of EBL, which is execution. And one of the things I hope you'll find particularly useful is the four defining features of strategies worth executing. Coming up next is Module 5 of the Evidence-Based Leadership Program, the third EBL habit of execution. It's about interpreting valid patterns in our performance measures to find the leverage to improve our business processes and execute our strategy.